Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we're going to be talking about the Billy Meier case this evening. Edward Albert Meier is an 80-year-old man. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmidruti, which is about 52 minutes east of Zurich. He lives in what you might call a pine forest or in that vicinity. His extraterrestrial contacts can be traced back to when he was growing up in an area called Bulac, Switzerland, which is even a little north of Hinterschmidruti, where Billy lives now. He started to get telepathic messages from a man named Svoth. And Svoth was a man from a race of extraterrestrials that originally allowed themselves to be called the Pleiadians. But they're not from our Pleiades. They're from a planet in a star system some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades, in a star system in a different dimension. These people live in a different space-time configuration than we do, a different dimension. The Meier information says there are seven dimensions in our universe, and I think during the last show I might have accidentally said nine, but there are only seven. The Pleiaren come from a dimension where populated planets are much closer together and probably much more common than in our universe, our universal space-time configuration, where it may take a dozen light years to find the next planet with people on it. Now, Svoth's people live on a planet called Era, and they're many thousands of years ahead of us in terms of their evolution. If you looked at human evolution in steps, there are seven distinct stages that human civilizations go through. And the Pleiaren are at the fifth stage, where we here on Earth are at stage two. The first five stages of evolution for human beings, for human civilizations, takes about 40 to 60 million years to get through. Part of that time is spent in the physical, and part of that time is spent in what's called the spiritual realm. So we reincarnate, we go from the spirit realm back to the physical and then back to the spirit realm. And each time we come back into the physical, we get a new material consciousness. And our material consciousness consists of the subconscious, the unconscious, and the conscious mind. It also consists of your personality. And we get a different personality each time we incarnate, so that we see life from a different perspective. We don't fall into the same habits that we did in the previous life. And this gives us a broader range of experiences, and it gives us a better evolvement. This is how creation works. Now, we have a part of us that's permanent, that stays with us with each one of these lifetimes. And that part of us is called the spirit form, which is also called the Geist form in the German. The spirit form is this tiny little bit of energy. It's no bigger than the head of a needle, and it resides in an area of your middle brain called the superior colliculus. Now, the energy associated with the spirit form goes throughout your whole body. And the spirit energy stays in the body even for about 3 hours, even after you die. Even when the spirit form leaves the body and takes it with it, the consciousness, there's a spirit energy that remains in the body for about 3 hours. And that's why some body parts can still, they can still have organ donation, because the spirit energy stays behind. A residual spirit energy, I should say, stays behind in the body of a human being for about 3 hours. Now, these are called fine fluidal energies, and fine fluidal energies are like the residual effects of your spirit form. And in your house, your furniture, musical instruments, books, even the trees outside have residual energy from your own body, from your own spirit form. And these are called fine fluidal energies. And this is the incredible power of the spirit form. The spirit form, again, is the part that never dies. It remains after death. And it's a part, it's a tiny fragment of the creation of the universal consciousness. The universal consciousness in the, or creation as it's called, is called, the term in the German is Schöpfung. And the creation, you could think of the universe as the creation's internal and external body. And the universe that we live in is the manifestation of the wisdom of creation. Everything which exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and the infinite and true love of the mighty universal consciousness. Now, if you look at the structure of creation, it's very much in the shape of an egg, and it has counter-rotating belts, 7 belts in all. The fourth belt is the material belt, and that's where all the stars and the planets and the galaxies exist. And it's the only belt that we can really see. The rest of them are completely invisible. There's something called the central core, which is about 3.5 light years. There's the next. The second belt is called the Ur-core belt, and it's humongous, many, many light years. Then there's the Ur-space belt, which is also tremendously huge. And then the material belt, the solid-state matter universe, where all the galaxies, the planets, the stars, and the gases are. And then there's additional belts after that. So these belts, they counter-rotate with one another. And the creation goes through, I believe it's 155 or something along those matter, 155 trillion years of expansion. And we're about 46 trillion years into the expansion phase of our universe. And during the expansion phase, it creates new spirit forms. And that's what's going on. Our universe is getting bigger. New spirit forms are getting created. Plants are being created. Animals are being created. People are being created. And that's part of the way the creation works. Now, the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. The first creational natural law, this universe that we live in, this creation has laws. And the first law is the highest law of them all. It's called effective love. And the law of love, love is the highest principle in all creation. And everything exists through it in absolute logic. Love is the highest principle in creation, and everything exists through it in absolute logic. So the love of creation is very logical. It's a neutral, positive love. Creation radiates love, much like the sun radiates light and heat. The second law of creation is the law of striving, which is the fundamental law of all evolution. Striving, there is no life. And without striving, there is no happiness. That's one of the interesting laws of nature, is that there really is no happiness for the human being outside of striving. So we have to continually, as much as possible, continue to strive. And let me read just a section in the Way to Live book that talks about striving. Striving creates the life right up to the being. Striving means delectation in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. But to be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. Affliction is inhibited striving and inhibited life. But inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution and stagnation. And it goes on to talk about what happens to the human being that isn't striving enough. Well, they end up in hopelessness, grief, confusion, irrationality, joylessness. It goes on and on and on. So this is a practical point of study of where you can apply this information to your life. This is the fundamental law of all evolution, is the law of striving. And striving is very important. Let me continue here. Creation itself, as well as all its creatures and Wesenheiten, is imbued with the power of striving in order to attain success, the future progress, and that which is higher. Striving is the power of the spiritual as well as the physical. So, you know, we get these times where we get out of neutral, positive thinking and we lose our motivation. And that's like a vicious cycle, because when you stop striving, you lose your happiness. So striving is the power of the spiritual as well as the physical. And striving is an incontrovertible creational law. One of the things that Colonel Wendell Stevens said about Billy when he met Billy and every time he visited him, is that Billy was constantly on the move. He was constantly working, constantly striving. And in order to talk to Billy, Colonel Wendell Stevens would have to go with him wherever he was going, whether they were slinging manure or whatever work they were doing there at the FIGU building. That's the only way that Colonel Stevens would get to talk to him while Billy was striving away. The greatest power in every single Wesen is there to serve the striving. And truthfully, the striving is the great and enormous power itself. Striving is the Ur means ancient. Striving is the Ur law of all evolution and of all absolutely full development. And striving is the power of the life in the sense of progress. If the striving is absent in some life form, then the power of the progress extinguishes, and thereby the sense of life. If a human being loses his or her striving, then he or she also loses the sense of life. If the human being can no longer strive for anything at all in himself / herself, he or she feels with deadly might that he or she is no longer of use to anything, and that as a human being, he or she has become impossible. So this is critical. This is the key to your happiness, is to continually strive. This is the fundamental law of all evolution. The law of harmony, the creational natural law of harmony, means that there's a bipolar structure in everything. There exists a negative and a positive. And our goal is to keep our thinking in the neutral positive. One of the most important books related to our thinking is called The Might of Thoughts. And one of the interesting thing is we have unconscious thinking. We also have something called pre-conscious thinking. And let me, if you'll just bear with me for a second, I want to find, I think it's on page 72 of The Way to Live, or excuse me, of The Might of Thoughts book, where it starts to talk about the, here we go. Let's talk about cognition first. The term cognition is a collective term for all processes, manifestations, and structures which are associated with the conscious and unconscious perception of anything. So let's break this down. When I was reading this today, the thing that jumped out at me was the fact that we have conscious and unconscious perception. That means we have unconscious thinking going on. That means you're thinking about things you don't even know you're thinking about. Your unconscious mind is. We actually are perceiving things with our unconscious. And we have thoughts which are called pre-conscious thoughts. And pre-conscious thoughts are thoughts which are unconscious right now, but if they're not repressed, they will become conscious. Unconscious process of perception runs its course through the psyche. So we have thoughts which are in our conscious mind, in our unconscious mind, and thoughts which are moving between the two. They are becoming conscious. They're pre-conscious. So there's a whole lot more to thinking than people realize. So one of the arduous tasks that we have is controlling our thoughts and making sure they're neutral positive. This is a creational natural law. It's called the law of harmony. And the law of harmony works together with the law of striving. If you're striving, it will help you stay in the neutral positive. And if you're in neutral positive thinking, you're more likely to strive. And you're a much better lover, which is the other law we just talked about, if you're striving and you have the law of harmony. We talked about the Geist form, the spirit form. We also have something in the center of the spirit form called the Gemut. And the Gemut controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. The Gemut is the counterpart to our psyche. The Gemut is our connection with the universal consciousness. There is something called the universal Gemut. Let me see if I can find it here. Just the way our spirit form and this controlling factor called the Gemut, the universal consciousness does as well. Let me read this. This isn't exactly what I was talking about, but it's interesting. Creation is identical to universal consciousness, which guides and prevails the being of consciousness. It is a double helix, egg-shaped configuration that simultaneously constitutes the universe in its growing expansions. Its pulsating double helix arms live as spiritual energy, while rotating against each other. And now this is what I was talking about. Creation, through its entirety, pulsate the universal Gemüt, a non-translatable German term for the spiritual counterpart to the psyche. So the universe has something called the Gemüt. Our spirit form has something called the Gemüt. And the Gemüt controls the thoughts and the feelings of our spiritual consciousness. So we have this material consciousness that is for this life. It, from the material consciousness comes your personality. The material consciousness is the only thing that can be creative. If you're writing a book, if you're reading a book, if you're playing a musical instrument, if you're doing crafts, that all comes from your material consciousness. Your spirit form cannot be creative. Your material consciousness makes all the decision-making. So the spirit form is a processor of the neutral positive. It is, one of Billy's contacts was a woman named Sannyasi, and she talked to Billy on March 26, 1975, and this is the 10th contact between Billy and Sannyasi. Sannyasi, at this time, in the middle 70s, was about 344 years old. She was a young, pretty woman with fair skin. She had blue eyes, blonde hair, and she would lay in her beam ship in fields close to where Billy lived, and Billy would drive his moped out there, and then he would sit down under a tree. She would eventually come out of her ship and walk over to Billy, and, you know, on nice days outside, and the two would talk. And she would say things like, "The human bears a spirit that does not die nor sleep. During the deepest sleep, it records all thoughts in motion. It informs the human whether his thoughts are correct or false. If he has learned to pay attention to it." Billy has an interesting definition of spirit. Evidently, we have a spirit body. I've not heard him talk about that much. I've talked tonight about the superior colliculus, where the spirit form resides. The energy of the spirit form is like a filigree web which covers the body inside and out. It brings life to every cell of the body. As I mentioned, when you die, the spirit energy still is present within the body for about 3 hours. Your spirit is the immortal factor of you. And it never dies. It never sleeps. It's constantly recording what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and it will tell you if your thinking is wrong, if you've learned to pay attention to it. And each reincarnation, the spirit form gains wisdom and power. So that's what the purpose of these material lives are, is to, so that your spirit form can gain wisdom through all of these incarnations. Now, Billy's spirit form is very advanced. His spirit form is 9.6 billion years old. His spirit form is the spirit form of the universal prophet, which what that means is his spirit form incarnates on planets, and it has for thousands and thousands of years, not only on the Earth, but in the past, billions of years ago on other planets and other galaxies. And his spirit forming and Billy's material consciousness now in this lifetime is what is called the Bandstrut. And this is the highest state of evolution that a human consciousness can achieve. It's also higher than an Ishwish. So Billy has incarnated on the earth as the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. But he has many other incarnations, people that you know, like Aristotle, Galileo, Mendelssohn, Mozart. Very important incarnations, even though he wasn't a spiritual teacher in those lives. I'm going to take a bit of a tangent from our, I'm kind of talking about the spirit form and reincarnation. But I wanted to talk about what's called the Barden, the People's Union of Barden. It originates from the home worlds of Barden 1, 2, and 3, which these worlds are in a completely different galaxy, and they are members of the Pleiaren Federation. One of their ships self-destructed on Earth in 1908 in what was called later the Tunguska event. And in Contact Report 428, Billy talks a little bit about this with Patah. They have very interesting conversations in these contact reports. Let me read what Billy says about the Tunguska event. I want to ask yet something regarding that which you have addressed with the 424th official contact conversation on June 17th, namely the arrivals of extraterrestrials in terrestrial space. There was indeed the Tunguska catastrophe in which space travelers suffered a breakdown and exploded their large ship in the air because it could not be repaired again. So Billy's asking Patah to kind of elaborate on that whole thing again. And so I'll just read a little bit of what Patah says here. The great spaceship, which at that time suffered a breakdown and was destroyed, out of which the so-called Tunguska event resulted, belonged to a people who live in a distant galaxy in your space-time configuration. Christianity, however, which was brought to their home worlds by some of their space travelers, and which quickly spread out, led to gravest religious wars. When they finally got order again, the space travelers were forbidden to make any more penetrations into terrestrial space. Around 1,000 years after this decree, a great spaceship of these people erred into the solar system as a result of faulty coordinates and became stranded on Earth by a still emerging grave breakdown from which it could no longer extricate itself. So for several months, the spaceship lay with grave technical damage hidden in the Tunguska region. Tunguska is in the northern part of Russia, I believe, whereby a large number of space travelers mixed, unrecognized among the Earth humans far from the hiding place, and sexually engaged with them, which resulted in many of them becoming sick with syphilis, and with they returned to their spaceship, and they infected many others with it. That had very evil results for the space travelers because very quickly, as a result of their constitutional difference, dangerous mutations of the disease arose. Just as quickly expanded to a plague-like disease, an epidemic, which cost many their lives. They could not expect help from the home world because, according to the old determination, it was forbidden for them to approach Earth. Apart from that, other extraterrestrial stations on Earth, namely us and our confederates, were prohibited by the government of the home world from helping the space travelers. Consequently, we had to hold ourselves to our directives, or only self-destruction remained for the Earth strangers, as they determined They built an atomic bomb, brought their ship up to a height in the atmosphere, and then caused it to fall in order to ignite the bomb. So they exploded their ship, and it was torn to pieces, a monstrous explosion. And that's the Tunguska event, according to the Meyer information. Very interesting story. Bit of a side tangent. I thought it would be kind of interesting to go on that for just a minute or two. I want to talk a little bit about Billy's mission just a little bit, and what Sfaf told Billy about his mission. In Sfaf's explanation, Sfaf told Billy, "Edward, listen very close to what I have to say to you. It is not for no purpose, rather for certain reasons, that this series of our meetings has come about. The cause for this argumentation leads back to determinations which lie very far back in the past, and according to which, during the time of your present life, you are fitted into a certain task predetermined by yourself." So this again is very strange. Billy, I shouldn't say Billy, but I don't know what else. His spirit form created this mission, determined this mission many, many thousands of years ago, tens of thousands, as was the case repeatedly in your spiritual line of reincarnations in former lives and other personalities and bodies. In order to fulfill the mission of proclaimer and to bring the whole humanity peace, true love, freedom, and unity, as well as unencrypted knowledge of spiritual matters and that which pertains to creational laws. You know, these talks with Sfaf are truly amazing if you pay close attention to them. They're absolutely awesome. Because of your self-determination, which far precedes the present, you've entered life as a proclaimer of the truthful creational laws and recommendations. Thus, as a prophet, you will only take up your actual mission and fulfill it when the time has become ripe for it. Interesting. The date that Billy's mission became ripe was the 28th of January, 1975. You know, I always thought the middle 70s were just an incredible time. And just amazing things were going on in the earth. I kind of feel like we're almost in a time where we're declining. I can't quite explain that or what I mean by that. It's hard to put into words, but I feel we're in a real struggle for our future right now. And if we don't get back on track, really grievous things can happen. But let me continue. "Until then, you will be rigorously learning in many countries of this world with different teachers who are informed about your arrival and who have been connected with me for some time or will be in connection with me in the time to come." So Billy was set up with these teachers, you know, Sfaf, Asket, Sannyasi, but also at the Ashoka Ashram, there were teachers there for them, for him there when he went to India and studied in the Ashoka Ashram. Let me continue here with what Sfaf says. "As with all really great proclaimers and sages who have taught here on the earth since time immemorial and have brought the entire humanity to the teaching of spirit, peace, love, knowledge, harmony, and wisdom, as well as real freedom, you have always been an inconspicuous human being, as well with all genuine proclaimers and sages. You will also have to learn very much before you will take on and fulfill your predetermined time." So Billy would have these long conversations with Sfaf on his ship. And at one point, Sfaf put a device on Billy's head which unlocked the abilities of his previous personality. So, which, and this is one of the talents Billy has now to be able to see into the future. Let me stop here and see what Svath has to say about our money system. Svath says, but you will not be able to disseminate your written works without payment, because that is impossible through the money economy system of terrestrial humanity. But you should not give attention to that, because the time and your traditional teaching of the spirit will bring with it that the emerging group, the truth of the teaching will be recognized, and accordingly also financial means will be made available with which your writings and books can be prepared. So here he is, Svath, this 900-year-old man, telling this little boy about 6-7 years old how he's going to be writing all of these important writings in the future. It is very, very interesting, this contact. I'm going to continue. Actually, I got off on a bit of a tangent there because I was talking about Contact Report 10 and about Semyase, who was Billy's third contact. And he did meet with her in that year, that magic year, 1975, that I was talking about, where the mission became ripe. Unfortunately, Semyase suffered a life-threatening accident in the Semyase Silver Star Center in Hinterschmidruti and had to be taken to her home planet of Ira for medical rehabilitation. And on February 3rd, 1984, was the very last contact between Semyase and Billy, because as an after-effect of her accident, she suffered a cerebral collapse in 1984. And she's currently recovering in the Tao universe. So that's the story of Semyase. Quite unfortunate. What happened was Jacobus, one of the people, the Figu, accidentally walked in while Billy and Semyase were speaking. And I mentioned earlier about those seven evolutionary steps that human civilizations go through. And the Pleiaren now are at the fifth stage of evolution. And their society will move into the sixth stage, probably not that much longer from now. And in the sixth stage, you lose the need for a physical body. So the Pleiaren will shortly, maybe 1,000 years, maybe 100 years, I have no idea, but their next stage will be to move into the sixth stage, and it lasts longer than I thought. It's something like 40 to 50 million years, where we're in a half physical, half spiritual body. So they're no longer at their current stage, no longer compatible with Earth humans, because our thoughts radiate such an unhealthy, immature kind of vibration. It literally causes them to lose control of themselves. That's why she fell. That's why she hit her head. That's why she ended up on her ship. And that's why those contacts had to be cut short. Now, it should be clear after me saying that why they do not want official contacts with Earth human beings. They can't really afford to be around us because of our thinking. Because of our thinking is not healthy yet. And so, and they're so telepathic. They have such sensitivity that it's physically unhealthy for them to be around us, because of our thinking. So we have to go through the arduous task of evolving our consciousness, because we are what you might call non-creational thinking human beings. We work strictly from our material intellect most of the time, which has many limitations. And the more we stick with our material intellect, will have a tremendously slow evolution. Let me read a little bit of something from Contact Report 11. In the non-creational thinking human being, the material intellect, with all its given limitations, takes the highest place and thereby has a consequence of tremendously slow development of the spirit and of the consciousness. The material intellect accepts the testimony of the material senses and their resulting conclusions, but rejects our deepest subjective intuitions. And we shouldn't be rejecting those intuitions, because our spirit form sends impulses to our material consciousness. And those impulses, in many ways, guide us. I've talked a lot about creation today, and I've talked a lot about the spirit form. There's a book that's extremely controversial, I would say, and there's an interesting article up on theyfly.com, and it's called God_Delusion. And Billy has a new book. It's somewhat new. Marianne Ulinger has written an article about it. I've talked about it before. She wrote this article in 2009, and it talks about the God delusion, or God delusion insanity. And she calls the book a masterpiece. Where Billy talks about the creational universal consciousness and how that does not correspond to our religion's notion of God. So let me read a part of this to you. It says, of the 7.5 billion human beings, and we have almost 9 billion now, which at this point in time constitute the Earth's population, 4/5 of them profess a belief in one of the 6 world religions, or in one of the sects which have emerged from them. They believe in a God whose name may not be named. They believe in a creator God, in Jesus Christ, in diverse saints, in Allah, in Shiva, in Brahma, or whatever they all are called, in nature gods, in 10 gods, and so forth. They are mostly also firmly convinced that they thereby believe in the legitimate creator of our universe and the one who determines their fate. They pray and beg for favor, health, objects, or material wealth. They hang rosaries over the rearview mirror of their car and crosses around their necks. And by doing that, they think that they have immunity from accidents and everything bad. And some people today still sacrifice food, money, animals, and even in earlier times, human beings. Virgins were sacrificed. So anyway, what is the difference? What does Billy mean by talking about creation? Let me read here what this article says. Billy's tool is his enormous knowledge and his wisdom, which has never been achieved by any human being. This wisdom relates to the creation universal consciousness and everything contained therein. Billy does not just point out and warn, rather he explains and instructs and provides answers. These are answers to the Earth humans' millennia-old questions, and also the questions which are just as relevant today, which could sound like this. If God is only a figment of imagination or delusion, then who is watching us? What is creation? If nothing is chance and chaos, then how is it really? This book is extremely interesting. It talks about what's called the God delusion insanity, which is a kind of mental illness now that's a part of the genetic structure of people on Earth. And it's much like a disease, he said. And it's this part of the challenge that we face here on the earth, is this ingrained belief system which is counterproductive and which is part of so many of our religions today. And this book is something hopefully someday I can get a hold of. I'd love to put my hands around that and try to get a greater understanding of what that is all about. Now, I briefly started to talk about the might of thoughts, and I got off on a tremendous tangent. And I was talking about pre-conscious thoughts, thoughts which are moving from the unconscious into the conscious mind. And one thing that I rediscovered today was that emotions can create thoughts, which is kind of a bad thing, because we want to be consciously steering our thoughts. So when emotions are creating thoughts, this starts another kind of cycle in our mind. Unconscious thinking is especially dangerous for the psyche. So our thinking process is incredibly complex. Now, emotions rage upward. You cannot steer emotions. Emotions are very dangerous. A person's state or feeling, scientific discourse has drifted to many other definitions of emotions. And there is no consensus on what emotions are, even among science. And this is a huge statement, because science has not even been able to define emotion. And the physiology of emotion is closely linked to the arousal of our nervous system. The Meyer information explains that emotions are lightning-fast reactions to some sort of factor in the body or in the environment. And both anger and rage are considered emotions. And our unconscious thoughts perceive dangers around us. For example, we'll suddenly turn and see someone coming towards us, for example, with a knife. Now, we perceive that unconsciously before our conscious mind did. When you put your hand on something hot, you pull that back, that hand back, before your conscious mind even knew what you were doing. So we have behaviors that are completely unconscious. So one of the things that we have to be aware of and careful of is anger and rage. Because anger and rage can have very devastating results. And this is an interesting article that Billy has, due to ununderstanding, popularly anger and rage are often put on the same level as each other. However, these are two fundamentally different factors. During the emergence of rage, the thoughts and the feelings run out of control and emotions are allowed to run free. Now, anger and rage have a very dangerous effect on the human body. They can cause problems like cancers, problems with the liver. So, and a lot of times, anger and rage are coming from an unconscious or a subconscious level. In other words, rage and anger spring up before we realize it many times. So let me continue here with what the Meyer material says. Perhaps, let me continue. Rage then must be met with love and feeling for others. So that is the way you counter your rage, as well as kind-heartedness, dignity, peaceableness. having a high regard for your fellow human beings can help to combat anger. Rage is sometimes defined as a violent, uncontrollable anger. Also, not using our intellect can lead to rage. By definition, anger is a violent, uncontained outburst, leading right up to a fury of uncontrolled, wild thoughts and the feelings associated with those thoughts and emotions. Now, the danger of anger and rage is that it can lead to a loss of discernment. Discernment is the ability to judge well. Discernment means to recognize or perceive clearly. It is very dangerous when we lose our discernment. So through anger and rage, the human being loses one of our best naturally given abilities, which is healthy discernment. Now, another great article written by Marion Eulinger in Mondrian in Switzerland is about anger. It's entitled Anger Harms the Liver. And she describes a friend that she had that had problems with anger. And I'll just read one of the paragraphs from this article. What I knew was, she's talking about her friend here, that she was a dogged fighter and she played extremely good tennis. I also knew she was angry at her husband, and that he didn't help her enough in the household, in the garden. He ate too much meat. He pulled out the bottom shirt without holding the upper ones. He shut all the drawers and doors with a bang. He esteemed her, but he didn't treat her to nice things, etc. In other words, he behaved sometimes like a bull in a china shop. Although to my outsider's eyes, despite his body height and intelligent, gentle, he seemed, Marion says, he seemed like a humorous and likable man. But this woman had this great anger at her husband, and I think it led to problems with her liver. And I'm not going to go over that whole thing, but Billy talks about anger and rage, and there's a paragraph in an article here I want to read to you. It says, by definition, anger is a violent, uncontained outburst leading right up to fury of uncontrolled wild thoughts and their feelings as well as their emotions. Thereby, the emotions must not be equated with feelings because they are in two entirely different things, whereby it is from wrong thoughts and feelings, which have been maintained for a time, that emotions first develop. Let me read that again. Whereby it is from wrong thoughts and feelings, which have been maintained for a time. So if you deep in your psyche are holding on to wrong thoughts, wrong feelings, and you're maintaining those wrong thoughts and feelings, that's when emotions develop. Let me continue. And then, which then break through and come to the fore at very appropriate and inappropriate opportunities. Thus, anger is conditioned emotionally and is brought about when a vexation appears. So, when you have these emotions and these wrong thoughts which have been maintained within you, anger is the expression of these negative thoughts which have been maintained in you for quite some time. Now, let me continue here. Through any incidents, words, discourse, deeds, actions, damage, or loss, and so on, the anger expresses itself through distorted facial expressions, an angry redness in the face, as well as through malicious and uncontrolled words, through uncontrolled gesticulation, and on and on and on. So, anger and rage are very, very dangerous. A couple of things to note. the trigger for our anger is within ourselves. The degenerated negative frequencies which we send out by our consciousness block when we're shouting are very toxic for ourselves. Our hepatocytes, which are our liver cells, are affected in such a way that they will degenerate and cancer cells are built up just because of anger. There is a word that sometimes defines those that are angry. Intransigence means refusing to compromise or agree. Inflexibility is sometimes associated with anger. If we want to prevent anger, then we have to take control of our thoughts. In summary, emotions are reactions. Emotions are able to create thoughts. Feelings occur because of thoughts. Emotions arise spontaneously and are hard to bring under control by our thoughts. Emotions arise so quickly that they are noticeable before we detect them. We cannot steer our emotions. There are still many other effects which affect our unconscious cognitive processing. You know, as I started, I was talking about the unconscious processing. Some things that can affect your unconscious is your state of your health, your desire, the fitness of your body, of your psyche, of your consciousness. Alcoholism can also affect your unconscious. So we have these subliminal perceptions which are present within every human being. And the unconscious mind are the processes in the mind that occur automatically and are not available for us so much. They include thought processes, our memory, our motivation. Unconscious thoughts are related to automatic thinking. This is extremely dangerous. This is when we go into the vicious cycle of negative thinking. When something is automatic, it is worked by itself with little or no direction from the human being. So what we need to learn is introspection, to examine ourselves, to observe ourselves, our mental and emotional processes. We really can't have introspection into the unconscious mind, but we can start to see patterns and we can start to come to a better understanding of ourselves when we see these emotions jump up. It's important to be aware that these unconscious thoughts that we have are extremely powerful, and I think we've talked a little bit about the power of the unconscious. The power of the unconscious is incredible. The power of our thinking is incredible. Good thoughts lead to good feelings. Good feelings lead to good habits. Good habits lead to good circumstances in our life. You have the power to create good circumstances in your life. You have the ability to be the master of your own life, to create your own circumstances. Your thoughts are incredibly powerful. I want to thank you for coming to the show tonight. You've been listening to Ohio X of Politics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great evening.